technical stuff sorted. Right, good morning, good morning. My name's Bernice, as you all know. Now, Eleanor Roosevelt is apparently credited to have saying, do something scary every day. So last month I went on a coach trip to the Isle of Wight. I played bingo, which was terrifying, but this definitely is out there. Definitely. So be kind to me, please. Right, first let's start by reading the passage up there. I'm not going to stand with my back to you. So it's Philippians chapter 2, verses 25 to 30. But I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, co-worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him alone, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad and I may have less anxiety. So then, welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honor people like him. Because he almost died for the work of Christ, he risked his life to make up for the help you yourselves could not give to me. Right, so a couple of weeks ago, Toby had a therefore. We've got a but. So we've got a but. So apparently a coordinating conjunction used to connect ideas that contrast. Yeah? So we need to go back a little bit. We need to zoom out if you're doing Google Maps. We could go back just 6 weeks, wherein Paul is saying, I'm keeping Timothy, but I'm going to send Epaphroditus back. Could, that would work, absolutely. It's a logistics thing. But as we get to the bottom of our passage today, we will see that he's saying to honour men like these, or men like this, depending on your translation. So we need to go back a little bit further. So I think we need to go back to the beginning of chapter 2, where Paul is talking. He first of all says to do nothing, or sorry, do not do anything with selfish ambition. And then he also, that's in verse 3, and in verse 6 he's saying to have the same attitude as Christ. So he's laying out, this is what you do. You don't do that, you do that. And then he's offering some, if we... then in verse 5, between 5 and 11, he gives us the most beautiful pen picture of Jesus, of what he did for us, of his life, of his sacrifice, of his character, of his attitude to life. And then if we could say, we could easily say, well, yeah, but that's Jesus. We can't do that. That's way, way, way too much for us. So he then talks about himself. He says, if I am to be poured out like a drink offering, verse 17, then that's fine. I'm cool with that. Down with that. It's fine. I'm quite happy to do that because I know you're settled. You're fine. In chapter 1, he said that famous quote, that to live is Christ, to die is gain. So he's saying, I'm quite happy to go the way Jesus did. This is wonderful. I don't mind. And then he moves on to Timothy and he says, I have no one else like him who will show genuine concern for your welfare. That's verse 20. So he's saying, Jesus, himself, Timothy. And now we move on to Epaphroditus. So we'll do this little bit. But I think it necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, co-worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. So what do we know about Epaphroditus? Practically nothing. There is nothing in the Bible. There are people, commentary, who suggest this and suggest that and suggest the other, but I'm not going to cloud your head with the ifs and buts and possibles. We do know that his name is derived from Aphrodite, which was a Greek goddess of love and beauty. So he probably wasn't Jewish. He probably was Greek. We also then know how Paul sees him. So Paul sees him as a brother. So that means he has given his life to Christ. He's serving the church. He is doing what we're all doing. He is a co-worker. So he's not just sitting and going to church on Sunday or however they did it back then. He is living the life. He's doing the stuff. Just like we've just said about people who serve, there are lots and lots of people who are serving Jubilee Church at the moment, each and every day. He's also a fellow soldier. Now, there's two. First of all, that means he's, if you think about the armor of God and things like that, it's about standing up. It's about taking the next step. It's about being a barrier almost to the world. And also the fact that Philippi was a retirement home for Roman soldiers would mean that they would understand what a soldier does, what a soldier is like, what you would expect from a soldier. So that's what we know basically. So then what did he do? What did he do? Who is my messenger whom you sent to take care of my needs? Map. Here is a wonderful map here. Sorry, turn my back to you. The red line is a Roman road that was built probably 200 years before Christ. So it's a well-established road. I do have its name here, but I am dyslexic and I can't read many things. Anybody? What does that say? Is it a T or a Ch? Ignatia? Don't know, whatever it is. I'm sure people who live there know what that says. So this is the route, a well-established route that he would have taken. It was roughly 800 miles that he travelled, and he would have travelled on foot. Probably about 20 miles a day. That's about maximum. 20 miles a day is all you could do. Now, how does that relate to us? We've got people in our presence who do marathons. And so that's 26 miles. So you would get in the car, drive there, run your 26 miles on a nice road, and then get in the car and drive home. Not to belittle you at all. So what about, do you remember Kevin Sinfield? Now, he in the summer did a 7x7x7. So he ran 27 mega marathons. So that's 26 miles plus one. 7 days running in July, the seventh month. And I don't know whether any of you saw him on the TV, but he was really exhausted. He struggled. He was in such a state after 7 days. Epaphroditus would have taken 6 to 8 weeks to make this journey. Every day, go. Well, probably not every day. Now, I want to just, about 20 years ago, something like that, I went on a little trip around the country, camping with my 14-year-old daughter. Took 10 days. We were living in Wales. We went up to Chester, then Carlisle, then followed Hadrian's Wall as far as we could, went to Pickering, down to Brighton, over to Devon, and then back up home. Quite a trek. She was about 14. She organised most of the stuff. She phoned up the campsites. Can we take the dog? Do you have hot running water? Things like this, basic needs. Now, Epaphroditus, he got an established route, but he didn't really know. He couldn't book ahead or anything like that. We had a car. He walked. We had a tent. He would have been in the open air quite a lot. He may have been able to stay with other Christians. We've got Thessalonica down there. He might have been able to stay with Christians for a while. There would have been inns because it was a well-established road. We know inns existed because Mary and Joseph couldn't find room in one. So we know that they were there. Then we had camp stoves, cook food. We could buy food in shops, stuff like that. He could buy food in little villages and things like that. He would have had flatbread, nuts and dates, that sort of stuff. Stuff that wouldn't go off, stuff that would stay in his saddlebag. In Pickering, we had quite a lot of floods, and I had to drive through quite a lot of water in the roads. Now, it frightened me because it was an old car, 20 years ago. Get water in your electrics and you're done for. He had a boat trip there. Treacherous back in those days. Paul talks about three separate times when he was shipwrecked, so it's a real risk to go on the water down there, and he's still got a long way to go. I couldn't find a map that would do the whole picture. Safety. I was relatively safe. We had campsites, they were secure, we had a car, everything was secure. He was at the risk of robbers all the time, and he'd got a very precious cargo with him. He'd got an offering from Philippi to Paul. Very, very, very dangerous. Now, what about companions? Now, we don't know. I had Lily. She was 14. We had a big falling out in Carlisle because she wanted me to buy her something, and I wouldn't. So it took about a bit of a time to get over that. He may have had companions for part of the way, because when you're reading through the letters, you see that some people would go to a place and somebody would stay and others would go on. They'd swap over at various places. So he would have had companions some of the time, but he would have also been alone for some of the time. Quite distressing. So that's part one of what he did. Whew. So we're back to the next. So sending him back. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad and may have less anxiety. Now we were, he was ill. Paul was showing here a lot of compassion. He was in prison. If people didn't bring food to him, he wouldn't eat. If people didn't bring medication to him, he would get ill. All sorts could happen. That I suspect they'd bring washing water so that he could clean himself from time to time and stuff like that. But he was willing to send Epaphroditus back because the Philippi people had heard that he was poorly. He nearly died. Now, if you think about it, so Epaphroditus left Philippi and travelled 6 to 8 weeks to get to Rome, and then somebody would have left Rome and gone back to Philippi and said, oh, he's ill, by the way, and then they would have sent messages back, oh dear, he's really ill, how's he going? Let us know. So 18 weeks easily could have passed. And this anxiety is growing because they love this man. Everybody is compassionate and loving. So Paul is sending him back to ease everybody's distress. He's not thinking about himself, he's thinking about the other people because he loved Philippi. It's said that it was his favourite. It was his first, certainly. So on to the next little bit. So then, welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honour people like him because he almost died for the work of Christ. He risked his life to make up for the help you yourselves could not give. So this is the last little bit here. You might be pleased to hear. Welcome him back. Why did Paul need to say, welcome him back? Well, it is quite possible, according to commentaries, that they would have thought that he was letting them down. He was sent there to take a gift and to stay and look after Paul. And he was instead being sent back. Had he done something wrong? Would he not let, you know, something was wrong. So Paul is making sure they know he's not done anything wrong. I'm sending him back because he misses you, you miss him, he wants to see you. So he's going back. He's not failed in any way, shape or form. Paul says to honour people like him. Paul wrote, Epaphroditus risked his life for the sake of Jesus. Now we've got another word for you here. In ancient Greek, this word here, anybody want to reckon? Give me a clue. Say louder. Well done. Thank you very much. I couldn't possibly repeat that. But it is a phrase that is a word meaning a gambler. Somebody who would risk everything on the roll of a dice. And what Paul is saying using this particular word is that Epaphroditus risked his life traveling 800 miles to bring the gift, and he risked his very life having anything to do with Paul. Because in those times, if you would align yourself with somebody who was in prison waiting to be tried for a capital offence, if he was found guilty, you could be roped in as well. Just like, if you think about it, when Jesus was arrested, all the disciples scattered. I've often wondered why, and it's because they could have been crucified with Jesus if Jesus had been found guilty, which he was. So, and Peter denied him three times because he was really scared about what would happen to him, even after all this time with Jesus, because our natural instinct is to survive, isn't it? So, he could have ended up in chains. So there we go, we're doing... Oh, I'm really quick. You always talk quicker when you're a bit nervous, don't you? So, application. What does it mean to us today? What I would like you to do, well, first let's say that in summary, Paul is saying we are to have the same attitude of Christ. As I said in the beginning, to not have selfish ambition and do things for your own credit and your own... something, whatever that word is, but to have the attitude of Christ. So what I would like us to do is to think about what does that look like in Coventry in the 21st century. I'd like us, please, in just for 5 minutes or so, get into little groups and talk about. Now, I'm not saying be boastful, but I'm also saying don't be afraid to say, yeah, this is part of my life, this is what I do. Give you a couple of examples. Nobody is expecting you to go 800 miles to risk your life in Coventry in the 21st century, but what about the little things? Do your neighbours trust you enough to come and ask you for help? Would they? What do you think? Do you think they would? What about... I heard Joyce Meyer say once that when she became a Christian, she realised that actually she couldn't just take her shopping out of the cart and leave it there. She needed to take the cart back to where it belongs. She was living her own life in a bubble, immune to the rest of the world, and she realised, no, actually. What about when you're driving and somebody cuts you up? How do you feel? Do you feel affronted? How dare you do this to me? Or do you, what about this person in the shop who serves you? Are they, are you annoyed because they're a bit slow? Or do you think, well, it might be their first day. They might have had a bad customer. All sorts of things. Well, and a bit controversial here. What about the homeless people? Do you think, oh, I'm not going to give them any money because they're going to spend it on booze or whatever? Or do you think, well, it's not my place to judge other people? So just a few little hints here about what you can be talking about in little groups. So I'm going to leave you to it now. Don't be afraid to move your chairs, because they'll all be absolutely be put away soon anyway. And I hope you can encourage each other and offer some insight into what it's like being a Christian. Thank you. Right, go for it.